Mormon Stories Podcast is made possible through the financial contributions of its listeners. To keep it alive and available to future generations, please consider a donation today at mormonstories.org.
Hello, and welcome to another series of Mormon Stories. Only I am not John DeLynn, as you can tell. This is Natasha Parker, and this is the first episode of the mental health / relational series that we are going to be hosting here on Mormon Stories. So welcome, and we hope that this is enjoyable and useful to all of you. I want to kind of go over the goals of this series really quickly, again, just so my listeners are aware of exactly what it is that we're trying to accomplish through having this series available. The goals are threefold. One is to give a voice to individuals and families and couples who are currently or maybe in the past undergoing experiences that relate to mental health issues and or relationships. Number two is to reach out to others who are going through similar problems and maybe don't know where to go for help or feel alone in the struggles that they're dealing with. So hopefully that they'll understand that there are many others like them and that as a community we can come together and help each other. And number three is to educate the rest of us who may not be dealing with certain issues, but yet are part of a ward community or a general community or a family community where these problems may be taking place and how best we can then be of service to our fellow members. So with that being said, I'd like to move on to this first interview. I thought long and hard about who my first guest should be. And I landed on the topic of homosexuality, which I know has been discussed often before here on Mormon Stories. And so I apologize for any who think that maybe this isn't diverse enough, but I will plan on being diverse about all the different issues that we cover. However, it was through seeing various clients and friends struggle with this aspect of their lives that much of my journey as a therapist, and especially as an LDS therapist, has been shaped. So with that intro, it is my pleasure and honor to introduce my very first client that came to me with homosexuality as the presenting problem, and I'll be calling him tonight as Marcos. We're giving him an anonymous name just to protect confidentiality and anonymity of his family. But hello, Marcos. How are you?
Good. How are you doing, Sister Parker?
Good. It's nice to hear you.
It's an honor and a pleasure to be here with you tonight.
Oh, that you're very kind. I very much appreciate you being here and being willing to share your story with us. So I think I'd like to start with maybe how it was that we came to meet. And I'll just be very upfront that we were in the same ward, which at that time I had a protocol of not seeing clients from my own ward. And I made an exception to that because of the issues that you were coming with me, you and your wife. And why don't you start there as far as what you remember about that?
Well, what I remember is, let me start by saying that I was married in the temple.
Yes.
And I was married for around 14 years before I was able to come out to my wife and the church. And after I came up to my wife and the church, I was advised by my bishop to go into therapy. And he mentioned your name. He said, well, as a matter of fact, we have a very good therapist here in the ward that is willing to take your case. And that's how I started seeing you.
If I remember correctly, you were seeing a therapist before me, were you not?
I saw it before you and before coming out to my wife. I went to other therapists, to one therapist, asking for help. And to be honest with you, I only went one session with him. Even though he was not LDS, he lived in the in close to the town where I used to live back then. And he was a therapist that specialized in homosexuality.
Okay.
So I went to him the first time and I explained my situation. And immediately in the first session, what he advised me, and in a kind of a forceful way, was, you cannot waste any time. You need to come out to your family. You need to come out to your kids. The sooner that you come to your, you come out to your kids, the better. The younger they are, the better. And they have to accept you for who you are. And in that time in my life, I was not willing to accept who I was. And I didn't think that that was the route that I wanted to take at that time in my life. So I didn't see him again.
Okay. You have two children.
I have two children.
And
wonderful children.
Yes. And at that time, they were approximately what ages?
At that time, I think that my children were, I would say, 9 years old and 6 years old.
Okay. So tell me a little bit about what were the precursors to going to this therapist and then to coming to me. What was going on for you to kind of finally reach the decision that, hey, I need to probably reach out, or I need to disclose something to my wife? Or tell me a little bit about that process.
Well, let me start by saying that from very, very little, when I was very, very young, I knew that I was different. I was raised in a Latin environment. I was born in Latin America, in one of the countries in Latin America. And my father and my mother were typical Latinos. And I remember that my father always told me that he wanted to have an heir to the name. And since I was the only child, there was an older brother of mine that was born before me, that he died when I was 6 months old and he was a year and a half old. And when I was born, my mother had a hysterectomy because he had a tumor. So there was the two of us, but 6 months after I was born, he passed away. So I was raised basically alone. And it was, my father was always, you know, telling me that, you know, he wanted to have, you know, have the, a continuity in the last name, that
right.
I needed to have, you know, children, you know, so it was a lot of pressure. And, basically, in the Latin community, there is a lot of pressure to be a macho. It's a lot of pressure to be, you know, a man in what they called what a man is, and which is not what I believe in. But, you know, if it was okay to be married and have two or three different mistresses. Hmm. And that was acceptable, and that was, you know, you were the stud. And but to be homosexual was something that was not acceptable back then.
Were your parents LDS?
No, my parents were Catholics. Mm-hmm. We're not strong Catholics. My mother was strong Catholic, but my father was the typical male that in the Latin community, where, you know, we went to church maybe two or three times a year. So we were not, even though I have to say that in my father's family, one of his sisters was a nun in the Catholic Church, and one of my mother's brothers was a priest in the Catholic Church.
Wow.
And it was also interesting that my uncle, who was the priest, had two children that were born to him while he was a priest. And that was okay.
Even though, Was he married or he wasn't married or?
No, he wasn't married.
Okay.
And he was a priest until the day he died.
Okay.
And that was not such a big deal, but to be a homosexual was not acceptable.
Did you, so before we get back to my original question about how the disclosure came around, let's talk a little bit about your growing up and when did you even know what a homosexual was when you were young? No.
I think that the first time I came across with somebody that I thought, I remember that I was going to school and I was like maybe in the sixth grade, and there was a little boy in the maybe second or third grade that was very feminine, and he was teased to death. And, you know, nobody liked him. Nobody played with him. He was ridiculed, but nobody said anything. I thought that he was just different. So I didn't know what he was. I knew that I was different. I knew that, I was not very good at sports. I knew that I was a little bit feminine. I never, when I was growing up, I never thought of me being as a gay young man or anything like that. It was until I was maybe in my early 20s that I realized that, you know, I may be a homosexual.
Okay.
Yes.
So as far as kind of the teenage years being a time when, you know, there's the first flirtations and the first crushes and kind of that normal developmental stage that we go through as far as falling in love for the first time, did you have any of those types of experiences? And if so, were they with other men, or did you kind of shut that part of yourself off, or what?
Oh no. I remember that my first crush was on a Russian girl that her name was Kira, and she went to school in the school that I went to, and she was blonde. She was a beautiful girl, blonde hair down to her waist, and she was absolutely gorgeous, and I had a crush on her.
Mm-hmm.
My first the first girl that I was very attracted to was the younger sister of one of my classmates that I would study together, and I would go to her home to study so I could see her sister.
Mm-hmm.
But I never said anything. I never told her that I had a crush on her, and I never told her that I thought she was beautiful. Never like that. I never said anything.
Did you date or anything like that in your late teens, or when did you start dating?
I started dating maybe when I was the youngest in my class. I couldn't excel in anything else, so I excelled in school. I started my senior year in high school when I was 15 years old, and I finished my senior year when I was barely 16. And because I was the youngest and I was a little bit feminine, you know, the girls didn't want to do anything with me. So after I went away to college, I started dating girls.
And how was that?
It was interesting. I remember my first kiss, and my first kiss with a girl was in my father's car when we were waiting for some friends, and she was a friend, a very good friend of my neighbors. And I was maybe 15 years old, and it felt good, but that was as far as it went.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. But
so at this point, you're 15, 16, even 17. You're not thinking of yourself as oh, there's something wrong with me in the sense of I'm finding myself having these strong feelings towards other boys my age? Or was it just the more you just felt like you didn't fit in to the macho stereotype?
Exactly. I didn't fit into the macho stereotype. I was the typical nerd boy, a little bit feminine. I was not good in sports, and I never thought, you know, I remember when I was growing up, I had a crush in a lady that was a famous singer in my country, that I thought that she was pretty. So I think that my first inclinations towards, I thought that I had a very interesting attraction towards my friends, and sometimes I confuse that with saying, well, I never had a brother, and I always would I wanted to have a brother, and I saw this very attractive older young man saying, I wish he was my brother. I wish he would hang around with me. I wish he would, you know. Mm-hmm. That was my mental process when I wanted to hang around with him, because there were some times where I would want to hang around with some friends of mine. And in my mind, I said, well, you know, I for some reason, I'm attracted to be with him. I'm attracted to spend time with him. I'm attracted to do things with him. And my thought process was, maybe it's because I don't have a brother, and he, you know, I always look for the older brother, I always fantasize about, you know, if I would have had an older brother, he would have protected me. He would have he would have come to my rescue when I was ridiculed. He would have, you know, so that was my thought process at the beginning.
And of course, you knew that you had an older brother who had died, correct?
Yes.
You knew that as a child.
Yes, I knew that, yes.
And how much of that do you think was related to just the fantasy of having him live?
Oh, that was quite a bit.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay. So at what age did you start kind of then thinking to yourself, no, maybe now this is more sexual attraction as well, that it's not just I'm looking for a friendship or, you know, a mentor or a protector, that I am sexually attracted to men.
When I started college, and I started college when I was very young. I started college when I was 16 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I had my first sexual experience with a classmate of mine. A male classmate of mine. Yes. And let me also say this, and I don't know if I can say this. My father, the way I remember that I was, I don't know if I was 14 years old or 15 years old. And the way that my father decided to give me some sexual education was he paid a young man that lived in my neighborhood who was around 25 years old to take me to a whorehouse. Mm. And he even told my friend, get him drunk first so he can last longer.
Wow.
So when I didn't know anything, so he took me out.
You didn't know that this was what the agenda was for the evening?
None whatsoever. And after he got me drunk, he took me to a place where the prostitutes were. And on top of that, of course, he chose a lady for me, a prostitute for me. And I went in the room with her, and I was completely disgusted, and I couldn't perform. And she came out and told the guy that took me, that it was a waste of time, that I didn't perform. And
Oh my goodness.
After that, he went and told everybody that I knew that he took me to that place, and I couldn't perform. And I was like 14, 15 years old.
How devastating.
Oh, yes. I mean, it was because everybody, and of course, everybody knew in my school, in my neighborhood, everybody knew. Everybody knew. Yeah.
Did your father ever talk to you about this? Or how did you know that it was your father who kind of set this up?
Because the guy told me.
But you never spoke with him about it.
Oh no, my father would never do that. Mm-hmm. Never do that. No.
Wow. So then, your first sexual experience of your choosing was with a male, in college age. Although you were pretty young, so really kind of late teens.
Yeah, I think I was like 17 years old, and he was maybe 19 or 20. Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And was that just maybe a one-time thing, or was that more of a relationship, or what?
No,
were you...
it was a one-time thing, and I felt disgusted, devastated. I remember that we were supposed to study for finals for a class that we had together. So he asked me to come and spend the night in his house, so we would study all night. And when that happened, I think that I left his house and I walked home around 4 in the morning because I was completely devastated.
Because of what you had done.
Mm-hmm. I felt dirty. I felt, that how could I let this happen?
Did you feel coerced at all, or was it enjoyable during, and then you had these feelings afterwards, like kind of like lover's remorse? Or did you feel even during the whole act like that you didn't have a choice about it, or that you were kind of just going along?
No, I did enjoy it. And that was also a guilt trip for me to say, how can you enjoy this? Mm-hmm. You know?
And you didn't grow up with these LDS expectations. So this was more the Catholic / Latino expectations that somehow you still very much picked up the thought that homosexuality was wrong, that anything homosexually related was shameful, bad, evil, whatever.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And for my family, for my father, you know, it was absolutely, you know, I knew, my mother knew that I was different. My father knew that I was different from very early age. And they didn't, do anything. I mean, to their defense, my father and my mother were not people that went to college. I mean, I think that my mother, I don't know if she finished high school, but I'm not quite sure. And I think that my father just went up to fifth or sixth grade, and that was it. Mm-hmm. So I remember one time that I was, maybe I was 14, 15 years old, and I told him that I wanted to go to a psychologist because I wanted to talk to somebody. I said, oh, no, what are you going to do with that? They just take the money and they don't do anything about it. You're okay. What's wrong with you? There is nothing wrong with you.
So you asked for this when you were 14 or 15 to go
yes.
see a therapist? Wow,
yes.
That's really amazing.
And my mother always tried to hide the son with a finger. You know, my mother said, no, you're fine. You're very masculine. You're a man. There is nothing wrong with you. You know, you're okay. You know, and the times that I was ridiculed, sometimes my mom would go and scream at my friends that she knew that they would have ridiculed me, and she would come and scream to them, he is a man like anybody else. Leave him alone.
So this ridiculing that was taking place was directly related to your manhood or to what were you being teased about?
About me being feminine and things like that. And you know, because I think that I was very feminine back then. So, you know, I was really cool about that. Yes.
So even though nobody talked really about things deeply in your family, you all still were very aware of this issue.
Oh, yes. Yes, and my father was very aware of this issue, but nobody talked about it.
So like a huge elephant in the room.
Yes, and I also remember that my father was not very affectionate with me. My mother was, but not my father. My father, I think that when I was around 6 or 7 years old, I was getting ready to go to school, and for some reason my father was at home still from work, or he was not working that day, and the school bus came to pick me up to go to school, and I reach out to give him a kiss, and he pushed me down, and he puts his big hands on my shoulders and pushed me down, and he said, son, men do not kiss other men, so don't kiss me anymore.
And you're 6 or 7 years old at this point.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So moving forward then, tell me a little bit about how you came to find the LDS Church. And
well, I always enjoy music and I always enjoy singing. And one of my friends who lived in the same town where I lived had a rock band or a small band that he would play for weddings and anniversaries and, you know, special events. And the LDS Church rented the house next door to him for, proselyting, and the missionaries lived there, and they had the meetings of the church in the house, because they, you know, at the beginning they didn't have a chapel or anything like that. So, of course, the missionaries started talking to my friend, because they were the neighbors, and eventually my friends got baptized in the church.
Okay.
And one of the elders who was there for a while, before he went on his mission, he had a rock band in his hometown. And so he would enjoy going when my friend and his brothers, there were 6 brothers, so, and all of them were the ones who formed the group, and they would rehearse in my friend's house. So when they would rehearse, sometimes the elders would come, and this specific elder would come and play with the electric guitar and just, you know, stay there and enjoy it. And I would go there, and sometimes my friend would ask me to sing a couple of songs for them, and then we would practice, and that's how I met him. And then he, you know, the elder tried to teach me about the church, but, you know, my family, even though my mother and my father were not strong Catholics in the sense of going to church every Sunday, they were strong Catholics because one of my mother's brothers was a priest and one of my father's sisters was a nun. So in that case, it was not a choice for me to be of any other religion. As far as my mother was concerned, she was going to be Catholic until the day she died, because that was the religion that she was born in.
Right.
And for her, there was not any other choice. So when he tried to teach me about the church, there was no way I was going to be able to hear the gospel from him, because I knew that my family would have been devastated. But he gave me a Book of Mormon, and he signed it, and I saved it in my house. And then, because I was a very good student, I was able to get a scholarship to come to the States and get my bachelor's degree.
Okay.
And the city or the town that I went to school to, first I came here to learn the language. I came here to learn English. And then I applied to different colleges and universities, and there was one of the acceptance letters that I got was from this small college that told me that they were actually very much looking forward to have foreign students, and they would love to have foreign students from all over the world, and they will be happy to have me. And I looked at their program of the career that I wanted to go into, and I liked it. And I went there, and when I got there, all the Latinos that were going to school there, they were talking about this American guy that spoke Spanish, that really liked to hang around Latinos, and that I had to meet, because if I ever got into trouble, if I had any questions, if I didn't know what to do in a certain circumstance, he would come to my help and my rescue, because he really enjoyed being with Latino people, and they said he's bilingual, he speaks Spanish. So 3 or 4 days after I got there, before I started school, I got a tour of the college with one of my friends, and we went to the student body building where the game room was, and we walked into the room, and he was there. This guy was playing pinball, and he said, "Oh, there is the American guy that I was telling you about." And he said, "Hey, there is a new Latino here in the college." And when he turned around, was the missionary that I met at my neighbor's house.
Oh my goodness.
And so when he looked at me, he said, "What are you doing here?" And I said, "What are you doing here?" And he goes, "Well, I live here." And I said, "Well, I just came to school here." And immediately he became my best friend. Immediately his family, his mother and father took me in their home. Immediately they took me in their home like one of their children, and I started taking the discussions of the church, and around 2 or 3 months later, I became a member of the church.
Wow. So this is classic LDS kind of fellowshipping and bringing you into the fold kind of thing.
Yes, and I thought about it, and I said, what the chances are that I'm going to go to school in the same town of this young man that was my friend in my hometown. The chances are almost 1 in 1,000 or 1 in 10,000.
Yeah.
If it's not more. So I said, there has to be a reason why this is happening. There has to be a reason why. And I believe in the church. And so I became a member of the church, yes.
What was it that attracted you to the church? What was it that made sense, or that made you want to join?
I have a very scientific mind, and for me, it made the gospel in the LDS Church made sense in regards of many things. A good example is the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost. In the Catholic Church, it was like the three of them were one. And they were the same personage but different, and it didn't make any sense in the mystery. In the Mormon Church I said it makes sense. They are completely different, and before I went to go to school in that city, I went to learn English in another town, and one of my projects in learning English was to get a research paper, and I got a research paper. I found a research paper where they proved that there were white people that came to the Americas way before the time that they thought. So everything came to you know, when the Book of Mormon came and said, you know, they came from the old continent to the new continent, you know, and they came here, everything made sense to me. And I said, yes, if God is a God, if our Heavenly Father is a judge being, it makes sense that he would not leave the people of the American continent without any guidance for so many years. Mm-hmm. This makes complete sense to me. So I said, yes, this is true.
Okay. So how old were you when you were baptized?
I was 24 or 20, 24.
Okay. Yeah. And were you able to tell your family back home? Probably not, or?
No, for a while. In fact, when my ex-wife and I were going to get married, my family was not very happy about it.
Because they knew she was Mormon, or?
Mm-hmm.
And because they knew you were getting married in the Mormon temple?
What happened was that, no, they didn't know that I was getting married in the Mormon temple. Is because she was not a Catholic.
I see.
Yes, and they didn't like that.
So when did you tell them? Like after you were married, I'm assuming.
Well, I finished college and I came to my country and got a job, and I was active member of the church, and I told them. I said, this is what I believe and things like that, and they were not very happy. But they didn't have a choice.
Yeah.
Yes.
So tell me about meeting your wife then, and what that process was like, and deciding to get married. From this experience that you had when you were in college, where you had your first sexual experience with a man, and then getting to the point where you married your wife in the temple, what happened in between there?
Well, when I became a member of the church, you know, I believed in the church, and I said, this makes complete sense to me, and this is so easy to understand, and why there had to be any mysteries. And for me, I said, you know, if I believe in our Heavenly Father or in a superior being, this completely made sense to me. And I met my ex-wife around 4 months after I became a member of the church.
Okay.
And we dated for a while. And then we broke up, and she went on a mission. And when she went on a mission, I wrote to her. Let me take that back. I was living here, and I had a dream. And I had a dream about her. And the dream was very vivid, saying that we were going to get married. And I said, that's really strange to me, because I haven't talked to her for maybe a year or something like that. And then a friend of mine, maybe a week or 2 weeks later, a friend of mine came to me with an ad from the paper, from the newspaper, saying that they were looking for somebody in sales who was bilingual, who had a knowledge of certain of color and things like that, and I had all the requirements that they looked for, and I applied for the job, and I got the job, and 2 weeks later I got to come to the United States for training, and when I got the job, I had another dream that with her that said, I have a week left to finish my mission. When I finish my mission, we will get married in the temple. So I went, before I came to the States, I contacted her mother, and I it was very, very, very vivid. Both of the dreams were very vivid. And I said, I don't know what I'm having those dreams. I cannot understand, because, you know, we're not in a relationship or anything like that. And then I contacted her mother, and she gave me my ex-wife's phone number. And we started to talk, and we talked for a long time. And when I talked to her, she already had her papers in, and she had her calling to go on a mission. So she said, "I have my calling. I cannot see you. I'm going on a mission." And I said, "I'll wait for you." So for the time that she was on her mission, I wrote to her once a week. And she wrote back to me. And then after she got back from her mission, we got married.
Were you in the habit of having a lot of dreams about your life, or about, was this pretty
different for you?
That was really,
and for me, it didn't, I said, why do I have these dreams? I mean, especially with somebody that I didn't see her for a while. They came to me, and then when I got this job and I contacted her family, and her family told me that she was going on a mission, and I already had that dream saying that she was returning from her mission. I said, this is amazing. I mean,
so these were very spiritual experiences for you.
Yes, absolutely. And when I went to the States to get my training, I got my temple recommend, and I went through the temple. And I felt a strong confirmation about that also.
Your experience at the temple was positive then?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Yes, very much.
Okay.
And one of the things that I'll tell you that when I had those dreams, and when I became a member of the church, there was not any... The feelings were there, but I made a covenant with our Heavenly Father, and I said, if I become the best LDS member that I can be, could you in return allow me to be married in the temple with a good woman?
Meaning, can you let these feelings of my attraction towards other men go away? Or...
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes.
So at the time of your conversion, were you classifying yourself as a homosexual?
No.
And at the time of your marriage, were you classifying yourself as a homosexual?
No.
Okay. So what you were...
I knew that I had those feelings.
Right. So you just felt like these were maybe temptations, or for whatever reason, they were just feelings you had that you felt like you could overcome.
Exactly.
And especially with this new tool that you had in your life, which was the church.
Especially when the church teaches you that there is nothing you cannot do if you submit yourself to prayer and fasting and all those things, and you do the best you can do, you know, there is nothing that you could not do. And I said, okay.
And you'll be blessed.
Yes, exactly. And I became the best LDS member that I could ever be.
Yeah, and I will, I will corroborate that. I mean, I remember you in our ward, you were very active, held many callings, high callings,
yes.
State callings. Mm-hmm. You...
I was a member of the bishopric for a while.
Yes. And you were, you know, active in our choir, of course. You said you loved music. And not only that, but you were, I think... anybody in our ward would agree with me when I say that you were somebody anybody could call on. You were always willing to serve, always willing to be of help. You and your wife, you know, your ex-wife, and you both brought a very rich and enjoyable and loving presence to our ward.
Well, and, thank you.
No, you did.
I enjoyed it very much. Yes.
So when you got married, you didn't tell your wife that you had these feelings or that this was a struggle that you had, or did you?
No.
Okay.
I didn't tell anybody.
No one, not ever.
I couldn't tell anybody. Who could I tell? Who could I tell that would understand me?
Did you feel very alone in this? Like there was probably nobody else like you, or very few people that were like you in this sense?
Well, I felt that there were not any other members around me that I would have known that they would have struggled with this, but me. And on top of that, I didn't feel that I could confide in anybody to tell this. Nobody. There was never a point that I heard in the church that said, if you're struggling with this, come to me. If you're struggling with these issues, come and talk to us. Never, ever I heard that.
Right.
So that was not a choice. That was not a choice.
So now you're married and you're trying to, you know, like you said, live the gospel to your best abilities, be active in the church. You have, you know, two children in this marriage. Can you walk me through a little bit of how this struggle continued to be part of your life?
Well, it was, I remember I used to travel to Latin America for business, and I used to go to different temples. I would go to the Mexican temple, and I went to the Sao Paulo temple, and I went to the Buenos Aires temple. And I remember that I stayed 2 weeks in Sao Paulo one time, and I said, I'm going to go to the temple every day. I'm going to make the time to go to the temple every day and do a session every day. Hopefully this will help me. It would stay there. Of course, the feelings would be stronger sometimes and weaker some other times. To be blunt, summers were hard for me.
Because men were less clothed, you mean?
Yes. You would go on the street and there would be men running in shorts, you know. Just with shorts, and they would be running and things like that. That was, you know, not a good thing. Yes. But I kept saying, well, I'm going to keep doing my best because, you know, I made a commitment and I know I can do this, and I know that this, you know, it needs to go away. But it never did.
How did this manifest with your relationship with your wife? I mean, were you able to find that you were attracted to her at any level? Did this completely affect your ability to be intimate with her?
It did affect my intimacy with my wife, of course, in many ways. Even though we were very loving and caring for each other and affectionate with each other, when it came to the real intimacy of the act, it was hard for me. And I would get really frustrated, and I would tell her, you know what, we need to get divorced. This is not good. And she would come and say, don't worry, everything's okay. No, it's okay. It's not a big deal. You know, that's fine. And in many ways, the most frustrating part about that was that in the other areas of the marriage, communication, affection, getting along, enjoying each other's company, we were 100%. We enjoyed each other so much in many other areas. And for me, it was even more frustrating because I couldn't be the husband that I wanted to be for her.
So feeling like you're continually failing her?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And, you know, it's interesting. It reminds me of something that you told me one time that you had been told, I forget by what type of leader, but maybe it was your bishop or your stake president at the time, but, you know, that for some people, maybe sexual intimacy is not meant to be. You know, there's people who are paraplegics or, you know, have some type of disorder or something that they can't be sexual with their spouse. And so kind of making the assumption that you, because of these other good aspects of your marriage and because you guys had a strong marriage, you know, in other areas, that maybe this shouldn't be such a big deal.
Exactly. And I said, no. Love is different when you are not capable of doing it because you're paraplegic. It's different because you are not physically able. But when you have, if you have the desire and you can't, it's a different situation when you say, I wish I had the attraction and it's not there. That is very frustrating.
Right. So walk me through how this kind of came to a head. How did this finally come to light, and how did you finally get to the position where you were, I guess, knocking on my door?
I got to the point where I got very frustrated, and I got to the point where I could not sleep. I could not. I could not do anything, and the problem that happened was that I started acting on my feelings. I always liked to, you know, exercise and things like that. And one time I went to the gym that I used to frequent. And when I was leaving the gym, there was a man waiting for me on the outside that saw me in the gym.
And made a move, I guess.
Yes.
And for you, that was a pretty overwhelming feeling, or?
Oh, yes. It was like, wow, what a difference. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was like, because before I was considering myself and saying, well, maybe I am not much of a sexual being. Maybe, and I would tell my wife, maybe I am kind of asexual, or maybe I am kind of not much into sexual intimacy, or maybe, you know, I was looking for excuses to say, this is maybe who I am, and maybe this is what I am, and, you know, that I'm not much of a sexual being. And that was not the case.
So you were trying to blame it on maybe being asexual.
Mm-hmm. Yes. or saying, you know, and especially because we had such a good relationship, my ex-wife and I. I said, well, maybe, you know, it's because I'm not much of a sexual being, even though every time I had the few times that we would be intimate, I had to emotionally and mentally get myself, how can I say this,
prepared
where I would think that I was having sex with a man. Hmm.
So really a big disconnect between you and your wife.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely. And at this moment, when you are approached by this man, you're still very much still active in the church. You're still very much holding callings.
Oh,
you're
yes.
still very much married. Mm-hmm. So you kind of start going into a double life.
Yes. Because once I experienced that, it was like, wow. It was like an awakening and said, this is what it's all about for me as a human being, as a man. This is what it feels to be attracted to somebody. This is what it feels to have, you know, a sexual desire for somebody.
And it was pretty powerful.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Right.
Yes.
And so does this come to a head because somehow your wife finds out about this, or you decide to tell your wife about this, or how long were you leading a double life?
Well, I met, I had a relationship with somebody for a little bit. And I fell head over heels for this guy. And because I was married, he said, I cannot do this anymore. And I got into a big depression. And I couldn't sleep. And I couldn't, I didn't have appetite. I went into a deep depression. And my ex-wife started asking me, what's wrong with you? And 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 finally, one time, it was winter, and she went to give me my winter coat, and it fell down, and my sleeping pills came out of the coat. I was taking sleeping pills at night to be able to sleep because I had to function some way or another. I had to go to work. I had to, you know, I had a family. I had, you know, I had to look normal to everybody. And when she saw the sleeping pills, she started telling me, you need to tell me what's wrong. You need to tell me what's wrong. You need to tell me what's wrong. I know there is something wrong. I know there is something wrong. And I finally told her.
And what was that like?
It was hard. It was very hard.
And her reaction?
Her reaction at the beginning was, oh, I'm so sorry. She started crying. She gave me a hug and she said, don't worry, we're going to go through this. It'll be okay. And she encouraged me to talk to my bishop. And I talked to my bishop. And in that time, I had a very high stake calling. And I had to talk to my stake president.
So a pretty incredible, loving response from your wife.
Yes. That was at the beginning. Mm-hmm. But then after that, I think that is typical to go through, well, this, you lied to me, you never loved me, you know, all these typical...
The anger set in.
The anger set in. Mm-hmm. And it's very much understandable. I understand that completely.
The betrayal and the all those feelings that go along with that.
Yes, absolutely, yes. And that, And when I came out to my bishop and I came out to my stake president and I was excommunicated, that's when I started seeing you.
So walk me through what that process was like to go to these, you know, priesthood leaders of yours and tell them something. So I'm sure, you know, private for one, and I'm sure embarrassing or guilt-ridden for you in another way, especially with, you know, all your feelings about the church. So what was that like? And what were their responses like?
Well, I can tell you that it was not easy. I mean, it was very hard. But on the other side, it was a big weight that I was taking away from my shoulders. I said, finally, I can get this, you know, this heavy weight that I have away. And it was a big relief for me to say, yes, it's out. And I have to go through the process. And I agreed to do whatever I had to save my marriage. I said, I'll do whatever it takes. But I was very clear when I talked to my wife. I said, I am not going to be in a marriage where we are not going to be able to make love to each other.
Yeah, I remember you telling me early on that one of your requirements was that we not expect you to just be celibate the rest of your life.
Yes, or that I could not, because when you love somebody, I up to this point, up to today, I have not changed my beliefs that the best way that you can show somebody that you love that person is through making love to that person. When you have your spouse, you know, your partner, whoever it is, that is the best way you can do it. And if I could not do that to my wife, if we could not do that to each other, for me was not good.
It was not going to work.
No, because you know when we were married and in many ways we had a good marriage. You know, we communicated very well. We respected each other. We loved each other. You know, I remember that when we were going to get divorced, that the word went out in our word that we were going to get divorced. There were two couples, friends of us, that came to our house and said, we will do whatever it takes for you guys not to get divorced, because you shouldn't get divorced. You love each other. We know that you love each other. We can see that you love each other. And then I sat them down. I said, you want to know why? Let me tell you why. And then they couldn't say anything.
Because they were right. You did love each other. Mm-hmm. But they didn't know what the issue was.
Exactly. And so it was, you know, so when I went through the process, my condition was, I'm not expecting that we're going to have this amazing intimacy. We're not going to be the best lovers in the world. I just want to be able to show my wife how much I love her through lovemaking. That's the only thing I want.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Stories. To comment on this episode or to discuss it with others, please check us out online at mormonstories.org. If you want to find other friends, family members, former missionary companions, or ward members who approach Mormonism like you, consider adding me, John DeLynn, as your Facebook friend. This may seem like a strange idea, but many of my closest friends have discovered that they are not alone in their thoughts or feelings or family or even a ward situation through discovering mutual Facebook friends. Finally, to keep Mormon Stories alive, please consider a donation at mormonstories.org. Music on this episode was provided by Clayton and Sky Pixton.